The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where this week, like every week for going on 28 years, we've been bringing you the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. 28 years. And I just got the word as I was walking in here that this is now year 18 here on WMKV, which shocked me. I was like, seriously, that's crazy that
wow.
I know we've been here that long. So it's time to shake things up a little bit after all this time. And this is going to be the first show where you get to see how things are being shaken up. The main shakeup here is, as longtime listeners know, there are weeks of the month where Vina is out of town or at a meeting or something, and that usually results in a replay or a show that I pre-recorded, which means you guys don't get to ask questions. And based on the 8 questions that have come into the email box in the last hour, I think you guys like to ask questions. So we thought about like AI, you know, just letting AI host the show, but we're all too old to figure out how to make that work. So instead, I have rounded up a couple of guest hosts who are going to take on the hosting duties in times when I am not around. And of course, I thought long and hard about who should do that, who's got the expertise, who's got the real estate experience, who's got the ability to communicate well, who's got the that caring thing that I care about, like really here to serve you guys. And I came up with a couple of answers. The first one is Miss Tiffany Ray, who you all will recognize as being a guest here a couple of different times on a couple of different topics. Most recently, I think it was shared housing. She is the 2024 president of Cincinnati REIA, who is finding herself with some time on her hands these days. And so as soon as I found out she had time, I was like, oh, Tiffany, why don't you do that? So, Tiffany.
Hey, guys. Welcome to the Vina Show. And I am so super glad to be here and serving in concert with Vina today, and we have an exciting topic for you today.
We do, and that exciting topic happens to be being fulfilled by our other guest host, who's going to be here at other times. It's a lot to ask somebody to like fill in for you every single time you're out of town. That can be a lot. The other guest will also be recognizable to you. It's Mr. Scott Ellsworth, past president of REIA of Greater Cincinnati, current president of the Ohio REIA Real Estate Investors Association, because boy, is he a glutton for punishment. Also a CPA, does a lot of tax planning work for folks, as well as consultation on some of the more exotic things that all CPAs don't know about, like componentized depreciation and tax things with your IRA and 1031 exchanges and all of those sorts of things. So he today is actually serving as Tiffany's guest.
Yes.
Because our exciting topic today is
taxes.
Q&A. Well, no, it is exciting because it's not a lecture about taxes. People get to ask their tax and 1031 and entity. We can handle entity questions. So you can handle entity questions today, not we. So listeners, the bottom line is, if this is your chance to talk to a very experienced CPA who is also a real estate investor, which I think is important. Like if your CPA is a real estate investor, he's probably going to know how to do your stuff for you. This is a big chance to ask some questions. You want to give him the phone number, Tiffany?
Absolutely. So for the Cincinnati area, that number is going to be 513-772-9658. And the toll-free number here for WMKV is 1-877-772-9658.
And the email address for one more week, we're getting a new Real Life Real Estate Only email address. But for today, it's still askvina@gmail.com. Do we have time to tackle one simple question here before the break, Mike? Okay.
So let's take it away with some questions. So the first question, Scott, for you is from Tony Stewart. And he says he's been taught that you should have four LLCs, one for your Roth IRA, one to handle your business expenses and wholesale deals, one for your long-term buy and holds, and one that is a utility LLC owning nothing but acts as a trustee for the other entities. So others say that you don't need this utility. What is your take on these strategies?
I think it's good. I think if you have real estate inside an IRA, I think you still need the asset protection because you don't want somebody tripping at a house and then taking all your retirement assets, right? So that's good. You do need a separate LLCs for both earned income type items like wholesale and things like that, and another one for buy and hold. The strategy of the utility one, that's sort of, I mean, it's okay. I don't know that you need to create a fourth one. You have enough protection there. So that would be my thing. And if you've got other properties that you want in trust or something like that, you could deal with a little bit of that. But I think the utility LLC is not necessarily needed. Now, I'm not an attorney, but I would argue that.
So pretty much a preference, right?
Yeah, that's a preference.
So this is great because now I get to ask questions because what you just said brought up some questions for me. A lot of people have more than one Roth IRA.
Yeah.
Like they might have one and their spouse might have one and their kid. Do we need a different IRA owned LLC for each IRA or can they all be one LLC?
No, generally there have to be a separate for each unless you've appropriately let them both participate in some deal, then the deal can have one LLC that each of those participates in. But if you got two houses in one Roth and three houses in another Roth, you got to have two different LLCs.
Mm-hmm. And I think the purpose, I haven't heard it called a utility LLC before. Yeah. I heard it called like a management LLC or something like that.
So you can, but in my opinion, the management LLC, the utility LLC that actually runs it, I think you can do that in concert with your wholesaling and that type of thing. You can put all that together, and then it can run those properties.
I think the reason people talk about that is just for the convenience, because sometimes you end up with 18 LLCs because you've got one for your deal with Scott.
Correct.
You got one for your deal for Mike. You got one for your Roth. You got one for your rentals in Kentucky. You got one for your rentals in Ohio. And it's just an easy way to say, no, just write checks here.
Correct. Okay. That's essentially what we do in mine. So I have different properties that are owned by either myself mm-hmm. or my wife and I or other partners. And so what I do with that is then we have one LLC that's an S Corp that is the management company, and everybody writes their checks to that. All the vendors get paid out of that. I don't write a vendor 20 different 1099s for 20 different LLCs that I'm paying from.
Exactly.
So I do want that. So I guess if that's really what they, maybe I just misunderstood the question. Yes, I do think it is a good idea, but I think you can combine that and do your wholesale deals in that LLC if you wanted to.
And you definitely do not want to have your Roth IRA LLC managed out of that.
No,
has to be
you
a completely
cannot.
Completely.
That's right.
Firewall.
Totally. Right.
Between
right.
that and everything else.
Yep. You need to hire a manager.
Okay.
And I believe we're going to go to a break. Hey, and welcome back from the break, guys. Today we're talking with Scott Ellsworth about tax strategies and tax questions. But today I'd like to tell you about the Tech and Tools Focus Group that is immediately following this show. It will commence from 6:30 to 8 o'clock. It is open to members and both guests. And you can register for that at CincinnatiRIA.com. This evening is going to be how to use free and cheap websites to find out everything you need to know about sellers, properties, applicants, and more. So, Scott, are you ready for another question?
I'm ready.
Fantastic.
We'll see.
Put on the spot. I'm not all-knowing, so there's something. I will say this,
yes.
Promise.
Scott,
if there's something
all-knowing.
I do not know, I promise if we have their information, I will do some research for them, not ours, and I will get back to them if there's something I cannot answer.
My.
Fantastic.
Boy,
you hear that guy?
You don't know these listeners, man. We'll get 900 questions now.
And just for that, let me repeat the number again. So for Cincinnati, the number is 513-772-9658 and 877-772-9658. The next question we have for you, Scott, is from Sharon Goebel. And it says, hi, wondering if one holds a flip property in multiple entities, including IRA, Roth IRA, S and S Corp at different percentages, when completing the 1099 at the end of the year, do the IRAs, guessing tax professional, create and provide the contractors 1099 from all three entities in the respective amounts over $600 threshold, or is there something else to do?
So it depends how you've structured it. If you've set up an LLC for that, they're all three in, then the LLC gives in the 1099. If you did a joint venture, I'd have to think about it. If you just had it in three names, I would have to think
about
it.
Guess you're going to have to go do some research.
Yeah, I would have to think about that.
Sharon.
But Sharon, if you put them in an LLC, it's real easy. The LLC does the 1099.
So then essentially the contractor would receive three different.
No, they receive one.
One.
If it was in.
Just one LLC.
So we formed an LLC, the IRA, the Roth IRA, and the S Corp. Each own shares of the LLC, but the LLC is actually the one managing the
Correct.
Whole deal. So the contractor would clearly get it from the LLC, but
I don't think Sharon did that. You would not. But even if you were, so I can tell you this, even if you're a joint venture, you don't break the payment into three and give the guy three 1099s. He's going to get one 1099 from one of the entities, and generally you would not do the entities that are the retirement accounts. And the retirement accounts actually don't have to issue 1099s.
Oh, okay. So maybe it's okay. And you're going to do research on this and get back to Sharon.
Sharon.
She's a member.
Yeah, so that's fine. So make sure we have Sharon's number and I'll double check.
So, yeah, it sounds like maybe just one and not from the IRAs.
Yes.
Okay, Scott. So here's another question for you.
Okay.
Let's see. If my personal residence is owned by a land trust and the land trust is ultimately under my revocable living trust, is it true that upon my death, the sale of my personal residence will qualify for the Section 121?
It really won't be an issue. You'll get a step up in basis. So your house is, so it's in a revocable trust. Revocable. So what happens is that means at this point the IRS sort of ignores it. But as soon as you die, it becomes irrevocable and you've essentially, that new trust has inherited that. There's a step up in basis. There's no reason to have a 121. Because now your heirs, you bought the house for 100, now it's worth 300. I die today. The heirs get it at the basis of 300,000. They sell it for 300. They don't pay any tax anyway. There's no issues with 121.
So basically,
when
tax
I die.
Avoidance.
When
okay.
I die. Now, you'll still get a 121 if it's in a revocable trust or irrevocable trust. So if you were to sell it while you're still alive, you would get the 121. But I think the question was if they died.
Yeah, that one was the one I thought was going to stump you, Scott. But nope. Ground right on through that one.
Can we start doing like dinner bets and like steak and stuff like that? If I everyone I get right,
I'll give you a gift card for everyone you get right.
Oh yeah,
really.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll give you a gift card to a steakhouse. How about that?
All right.
Actually, we need to go to the phones and talk to Jonathan, who apparently is calling from Mia, which I assume is Miami, and there's
Miami.
Just not enough spaces on the screen. Jonathan, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
What's going on, Vina? How are you?
Doing good. Feeling good because I'm just sitting here and Tiffany's doing all the work. This is awesome.
Are you in Miami?
I am in Miami.
All right. So nice weather, huh?
It's kind of rainy out, but Yeah, no, it's great living here. So.
So I
sent in Vina. I sent in the question by mail, by email, but I didn't know whether you got it, so I thought I would just call it out.
Oh, we love calls.
It gets you bumped up in line too.
It does. It gets you bumped up. That's true.
That's cool. What are the tax, risk, and benefit differences between using a life estate versus a ladybird deed when selling a property to a buyer who remain in the property until death of the last spouse or until they change their plans and decide to move into an independent living or something like that?
Okay, well, you're going to get me on this one. So you got to back it up. So what are my two options?
Life estate or ladybird deed.
Okay, and then what is the scenario?
Scenario is that I'm looking at is homes are hard to buy. Some older people want to live where they want to live, but they can't afford it. So we give them a life estate somewhere or a ladybird deed to the seller. And when they're done, when they die, the last spouse dies, or when they decide, you know, we want to change our mind, we're going to go to an independent living or whatever, that then they leave, the house goes back to the seller.
Jonathan, just so you know, ladybird deed is not a term that we commonly use in Ohio. I only actually heard that term myself about 3 or 4 months ago, and I had to ask what it was. And what we would call that in Ohio is a due on death deed.
Okay.
So it's.
But it's a deed versus.
Yes.
Versus an estate.
That's right.
Right. So have you just paid them for the house and they get to live in it, or are they? So you already prepaid them for the house. You bought it today.
In the case of a life estate, you buy the house. You grant them a life estate that says they can live. They not just live. A life estate doesn't just say you can live there until you die. It says that you are in control of it until you die.
Right.
So you could, in theory, move out into another place and rent the house. It's like when you die, I am the remainder man in the estate. Okay.
Right.
The ladybird deed is really similar, but it's instead of being done through a life estate, it's a due on death deed. It's a, I die, the deed automatically goes. It's kind of like a survivorship deed, except not with a family member or a spouse.
So I think your
difference may be maybe between like possessive rights versus ownership rights.
Mm-hmm.
So there's obviously legal issues, which I'm not qualified to answer, but from a tax standpoint, you bought the property. Today you bought the property. That is your basis. You're letting this, individual live there. Cause you're a nice guy and that's the way you're going to make sure you nail the property, but it's going to be whatever. So if I paid $300,000 for it today, when I then take it over and now it's worth $600,000, if I sell it, I'd have a long-term capital gain of $300,000. Or I would rent it, but my depreciation is going to be what I bought it at, not what it's worth today. So.
Yeah. And Jonathan, there's a third option that you ought to look at. And it is instead of a life estate, it's an estate for years. Cause the thing that's always scared me about giving people life estates is what did Jane Austen say? She said, people always live forever when there's an annuity due to them. Replace the word annuity with life estate. And I think you've got that same issue. An estate for years doesn't say you get it until you die. It says you get it until you're done with it. So then you don't have that issue of they moved out and into the nursing home and now it's just sitting there empty and there's nothing you can do. You've heard Pete's story about that, right?
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
And the angle on this, by the way, is that, you know, people want to live where they want to. They may not want to pass it on to their, you know, they may want to buy it in such a way in which they pay less and they don't get to pass it on to their kids. And then the seller might get some tax benefits from the situation itself. So that's what I was looking at.
No, I mean, I think in general, if they are used properly, and properly partly means, of course, you get an attorney involved to drop the documents and... It also means you're really careful not to do this with someone who's showing any signs of dementia, right? I think it's a really good real estate strategy if you can park money for potentially years, looking for the upside later.
And the from a seller standpoint, she would get the 121 at that point because she has sold her principal residence. Essentially,
you know, what if she could combine it? What if they combined it and then you got the basis and the automatic transfer?
The basis combined what?
Well, in a life estate, you've actually already bought the property, so you can't do any kind of combination there. In the ladybird deed, really, they still own it until they die, so their kids would get the step up in basis.
Yeah. Yeah, so on that one, it would not be, you wouldn't have really bought it, right? You're just going to get it, you're going to buy it at the time of death for X price. You probably set a price, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm not fully sure of the strategy. This is a Vina. I'd rather let Vina go into it because she's got more experience.
No, but it makes me think we need to get somebody on here soon to talk about different kinds of deed transfer strategies. Because somebody who's actually done one of these ladybird, they're apparently pretty common in places that aren't Ohio.
Where people are retired.
Once I heard what it was, I was like, oh, that happened to me. I actually got a mobile home that way last summer, accidentally. I didn't realize what kind of title I had, and the lady died, and the property was just mine. And this was a note I had bought, so you know, I didn't understand any of this until it actually happened. So I think we should get somebody on here to talk about these different kinds of deeds. Because I'd also like people to know more about quitclaim deeds than they know.
Good idea.
Because I hate seeing people take quitclaim deeds and not do title searches. That almost always turns out badly. So, yeah, that's a good thank you for the show idea, Jonathan.
It's a good start, right?
Keep listening in, and we'll get somebody on here who's an expert about it.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
You too.
And now we're going to go to a break. Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate. I am Tiffany Ray, and I'm here with Scott Ellsworth today. I would like to remind you that our lines are open, and you can call us at 877-772-9658. Okay, a few housekeeping items. Wanted to remind all of you guys out there that tomorrow is our monthly in-person chapter meeting, and we're going to be doing something fun. It's going to be a networking contest. So you get to learn all the different people, things that they do, meet all of the investors, and they're going to be food. There's going to be food, and there's going to be prizes.
Prizes,
yes.
Prizes.
Tomorrow from 5, the doors open at 5, and it's going to be till 9 o'clock p.m.
Yeah, and the second part of the meeting, we're doing a creative finance workshop, too.
Oh, nice.
So it's going to be like hands-on, try and learn how to solve these problems. And, that's the other thing that everybody has got to mark down right now is it's not at the Holiday Inn. It's at the Marriott, which is right up the street. In Westchester, because I forgot that myself. I almost sent the speaker to the wrong place because I forgot that, I don't know, they're having some big corporate to-do at the Holiday Inn. So we're down at the Marriott's doing our little fun to-do, little 100 people fun to-do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you're anywhere near Cincinnati.
Come on down. And it's free and open to the public, and you can retrieve your ticket at CincinnatiRIA, that's REIA.com. And back to our scheduled program. Scott, you ready for another question?
I am.
Okay, this one comes from, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce this name. Is it
Matt V?
Something like that. Yes, the question is, I am reactivating out of retirement into the Denver, Colorado market.
Okay.
All my prior resources were in South California. Is there a suggested identification and qualification protocol for identifying helpful, knowledgeable CPA resources in my local area?
Oh, I'm sorry, but Matt V gets the award for the best question of the day.
Right. Yes.
Because people don't think hard enough about what question should I maybe ask a CPA to find out if they can actually do a good job with my complicated
awesome
real estate thought. Taxes.
Yeah. The first thing I would actually suggest is that if you find a Facebook group that is in that area, You can, one, if you can join it, if it's closed, you'll need to get it into it. But you would be able to then look and see what recommendations. Typically on Facebook, a lot of people are like, give me good real estate CPA. You are going to need to ask some questions with that, primarily their experience. A lot of CPAs will say they have experience with rentals. They own a rental and they think they're, you know, it's the house they used to live in and they move. So I'm not knocking any CPAs, but there's expertise. I don't do other stuff that I don't do oil and gas. I don't do, you know, that kind of stuff, mineral rights. So I think that's good. The other thing is look for a local RIA in that area and see if they have vendor members that are CPAs. Those CPAs generally, will understand real estate, better than, normal ones you'd find on the street.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, our taxes can get stupid, like complicated.
Yeah, they can. And very much.
I talk to people all the time that say, well, my CPA said that I couldn't open an IRA because I make too much money. And, oh, gosh, go get a CPA who actually understands how you can get an IRA even though you make too much money.
And so we're going to go to the line. I believe, Bruce, you're on?
Yes, I don't love paying taxes, and I was wondering if...
You don't? No, you're weird. You are really weird.
It must be strange. I'm trying to avoid the death and taxes thing, and only be subject to death, but even that is a problem. I wish I could avoid. But anyway, taxes, it sounds like if you have all your real estate dealings within a Roth IRA or a Roth 401k, you would not have to pay taxes on anything that's earned.
Correct.
And if under certain circumstances, for example, the Roth IRA, if you're 59 and a half and have had it for 5 years, you could take money out tax-free.
Correct.
And I'm not sure what the regs are on a Roth 401k, but is a Roth 401k better because maybe you have more flexibility? And I guess the problem is, I know you, are there limits on that? I guess depending on the administrator for either one, where maybe you can invest in notes, but you can't own property or something like that.
No, so first of all, there is no restriction. If you have a self-directed IRA or a self-directed 401k, traditional or Roth, there are certain things you can't invest in. And you can't like hold gold, like real gold. You can't keep it at your house, right? You can actually have it, held. I think there's some special ways, but basically with real estate, you can invest. You can lend on stuff. You can do options. There's restrictions and rules you got to watch out for: prohibited transactions and disqualified individuals. Now the reason I like 401ks better, because if you screw up, which I would argue that over 50%, if not 80%
at least,
of investors who have self-directed IRAs or 401ks, they cross the line. There's a thin fence, and it's not even as wide as those beams that the gymnasts are on. And inadvertently, they all do, well, some inadvertently, some do it intentionally. They go to the wrong side of that line, and that's when you're going to get into real trouble, because if you're in an IRA and you do that, you will blow up the entire IRA. So I'll just give you an idea. So if I had a Roth IRA, now Roth, I'm over 60, is a little bit different, but if you had an IRA over and you blew up your IRA, in other words, if I lent a dollar to my mother out of my IRA, that $1 million IRA all of a sudden all becomes distributed. So if it's a Roth and you're over 60, not a huge deal, except that now you're earning income outside the Roth, right? So we don't want that. if you're traditional, you have a big tax consequence. Now with a 401k, the nicer thing about that is that only the transaction gets penalized, not the entire 401k doesn't get destroyed. So if I lent a dollar to my mother out of my 401k, the penalty is going to be on $1, and the other $1 million stays intact. So I like 401ks better for that. The other thing is that a 401k is not, for debt financed real estate, is not subject to UBIT. You want to stay away from taxes, right? So because you want to do that, if you're going to have any kind of debt financed real estate, if it's all cash, it really doesn't make as much of a difference. The other thing is there's a little more protection. I'm not the attorney, but there's a little more protection from creditors inside a 401k versus inside an IRA. So
why doesn't everybody in the world have a 401k instead of an IRA?
Because you have to have earned income. So let's say you're retired and you're just sitting on the beach in Miami with our other, who's his name? Our previous guest?
Oh, Jonathan from Miami.
Jonathan.
Okay.
So if you're sitting down there with Jonathan, you don't have earned income, right? You're just sitting on the beach in Miami. So you've got to have earned income. And the problem is if you have earned income today, let's say you're a contractor doing some work and so you have a 401k self-directed. The problem is once you stop working, you've got a very limited amount of time and you've got to dissolve that 401k and send that money to an IRA. So now there's ways to do it.
Whoa, is that true? I did not know that until you just said it.
What?
If I stop making earning income, I have to turn my IRA, my 401k into an IRA?
Yeah.
Oh,
because,
man.
Because you are no longer in business, right? Your company that has the 401k is no longer.
My company can still be working if I'm not.
Well.
Is it really that it goes away or can I just not contribute to it anymore?
You can't contribute to it, but you're telling me, so if I have a company that does contracting, right?
Uh-huh.
And you're going to say it still exists.
Right. It's just paying other people to do the work.
As long as it's paying other people to do the work, that 401k, that's fine.
Oh my God. You almost gave me
okay,
a heart attack.
I'm sorry,
I was like,
I'm
never going to be able to retire.
I am thinking more of a solo. I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm giving Vina a heart attack. She's been around. I mean, she's been here for 28 years, so she knows she's getting old. So I do have to watch those heart attacks.
Mike literally had to change my diaper when I first started.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my.
So anyway, so yes, you can, yes, I take that back. As long as you still own a company that is operating, problem is most solo individuals, once they stop working, their solo 401k, their company's not in business.
Okay.
And so now you've got to move that over. So I apologize. Clarification is always a key.
I'm going to go take a Xanax now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but if it was a 401k from another company, like a hospital, and you quit working there 15 years ago, you still have the 401k and you don't have to convert it to an IRA, right?
Correct, except that they're not going to let you invest in real estate.
Yeah, but he can convert his old company for. There's a lot of people with old company 401ks from sometimes years ago.
Right.
He can convert it to an IRA for sure. Can he convert it to a solo 401k?
He can, as long as he has the solo 401k. He has to have a new business with earned income. So yeah, you can transfer it out.
Can't you convert it to a Roth IRA and then it stands alone?
So is the 401k an IRA, a Roth at the company?
No, not yet. No, it's not a Roth.
So honestly, I would probably take it from the 401k traditional. I would move it out to a solo 401k. Find some business. I don't care. Sell junk on eBay out of your garage. Go to your Americans have so much junk, and I have other words for it, but it's so much junk.
You can come to my garage and sell some of my junk too, Bruce.
Just sell the stuff and make a couple thousand. I mean, don't make $100. Make it legitimate, $2,000, $3,000. And so set up this solo 401k, then you transfer traditional 401k over to your 401k, and then inside the 401k, convert it to a Roth. You don't want to take it out, the 401k out to an IRA, and then convert that traditional IRA to a Roth IRA, because I can't get the Roth IRA into a 401k. I can take the 401k original from my other company, move it out to an IRA, traditional, leave it in traditional, and then roll it into a solo 401k. I just can't get that Roth IRA over, so don't convert it.
You got enough letters in your life there, Bruce? IRA
401k? Yeah. I've always thought that if you converted it to a Roth 401k, as long as the company that's administering it allows you to invest in real estate, you could do that. But he's making it sound like it would have to.
No,
converted to an IRA.
No, you could. I've just not. So my company,
401k.
I have a special 401k set up for my company because I love real estate, and my employees can do self-directed 401ks. Most companies, if you're working at P&G, GE, they're not set up to allow you to do self-directed.
Yeah, what he said, Bruce, is that your old hospital 401k, unless you turn it into a solo, is not going to let you invest in real estate.
I would be surprised.
So the step is,
I can't convert it into a self-directed Roth 401k.
You can
and invest in real estate.
Yeah. So the step is convert it, then invest in real estate.
Right.
In other words, take it out of the hospital 401k, move it into a solo 401k for your earned income business. Something I sell stuff on eBay, and then at that point convert it to a Roth. And then invest in real estate.
Which means pay taxes.
It stays in the 401k when you convert it to a Roth, right? You've got to pay tax when you convert it to a Roth.
So you have to go to a solo 401k before you can convert it to a Roth 401k to invest in real estate.
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your comments, Bruce. Thank you, Scott. We're going to go to a break. Be right back. And welcome back to Real Life Real Estate. You're talking to Tiffany Ray, and I'm here with Scott Ellsworth today. We've been talking about life estates, entity structuring, Section 21, and all types of fun tax stuff. So I'm going to give it a little break and tell you about this exciting opportunity coming up this Saturday, this March 9th. If you've ever wondered how to get into and or start wholesaling, we're going to have an event from 9 to 3. You can register for that if you're a Cincinnati RIA member or other RIA or co-RE member at CincinnatiRIA.com. And Scott, are you ready for another 1031 question?
Sure.
Fantastic.
He sounds so excited.
I know. He's like, sure.
I'm good.
Okay.
All right. So here we go.
They're
with
fun.
This
they are fun.
Oh, that's a matter of opinion, I tell you. So this is from Julie Harrison. She says, hello. I inherited some out-of-state land a few years ago, and the assessed value just quadrupled. Oh, congratulations. I like to sell and purchase something nearby. Might this be eligible for a 1031 exchange? And if so, what would be considered a like-kind property?
Okay, so yes, land that's held for investment. She wasn't fishing on it, hunting on it, doing it, all that kind of stuff. It wasn't for personal use. It was something's heritage she inherited. It was held for investment. She didn't do anything with it. She was held for investment. So that would be eligible for a 1031, okay? And like-kind just means real estate. So she could trade it, because that's what you're doing with a like-kind exchange. You're exchanging it, you're trading it. She could trade to an apartment building. She could trade to five single-family houses. She could trade another piece of land near her for investment purposes.
So it doesn't have to be land, in other words.
No, it just has to be real estate.
Okay, thank you. So let's talk about Christopher French's question, and he's talking about self-directed IRAs. So if a self-directed IRA owns a single-family home or other real property, can the self-directed IRA complete a cash-out refinance in order to access the equity to purchase additional assets?
Yes, it can. So there are, so the IRA's got to borrow the money, right? So it's going to borrow the money, and there are probably a dozen lenders throughout the country that typically will lend it. It's a non-recourse loan. So if you've got this IRA, you cannot guarantee that loan. That's not permitted. So these banks, though, some people think of cash out refis, they want to get 80%. You're not going to get that. So with these, because it's non-recourse, and there's the bank has nobody to go after. The only thing your bank gets is the keys to the house. So they're only going to lend you about 50 to 60% of the value. And it's all going to be based on how the performance of the property, because they're not looking at you, because it's not you.
And they're going to loan it to you at 10%. That's the other thing. Their rates are typically higher.
They will be higher. Non-recourse rates are typically higher.
And, Chris, I think the question you should have asked is not can you do it, should you do it? Because UBIT.
There it is.
So, right, if you're in an IRA, there would be UBIT at that point. But if you're in a 401k, no UBIT.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can get your traditional IRA money, but is this a Roth?
It just says SDIR.
So if you're in a traditional IRA, open up that solo 401k, find a real business, something that can be a business, put it into that 401k, then do the refi and you won't have UBIT.
Or use a structure that doesn't... Okay, so you could sell
Here
that...
Here she goes with this creative
you
stuff.
You could sell that property to somebody outside an IRA, and then you could... That, so you'd have the money from the sale, and then your IRA could master lease it back with an option to buy it back, which is not financing, which doesn't trigger UBIT. Or you could sell somebody an option on the property, which is not financing. I'm going to shut up. Mike's giving us a 5-minute signal. No, I'm having a great time because like Tiffany's handling all the hard work, and I'm just like, Robin, did I just date myself? Batman. Terribly. No. Well, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. The new Batmans don't have a Robin.
So do we have time for one more question? Oh, yeah. I'm thinking. Yeah. So Constance, hi, Scott. I'm exploring the best entity structure for my real estate investments, and I value your professional guidance on this matter.
Well, thanks.
My strategy involves both flipping houses and holding properties for rental income. I'm also sourcing
deals.
Thank you. Deals directly from the sellers. Here are my specific questions. One, and maybe you should take these one at a time, or you can have them all. Considering my dual strategy of flipping some properties while holding others for rental, do you recommend establishing two separate LLCs?
Yes, two separate LLCs. One for the earned income side, the flipping, and one for the rental.
Okay, so what is the advantage or disadvantage for long-term rentals to do it that way?
You just want those in that because the earned income LLC, eventually I'm going to be so successful with it that I'm going to want to convert that to an S-Corp. At the time I convert it to an S-Corp, we don't want to have any kind of rental property held inside an S-Corp. So keep them separate. and it also protects the two businesses separately.
Okay. Alternatively, is it more practical to have single LLCs that holds a certain number of properties, for example, 10 in each?
Or so the problem with LLCs, and some people say get an LLC, one LLC for every single property. Well, the problem with that is most investors can't properly maintain one LLC, much less 10. So usually they'll do it. You could create an LLC because you do want to protect, right? It's limited liability. So you're going to protect those assets. So I might say that I'm going to do it geographically, could do a number. Some people say I only want a certain amount of equity at risk. The problem is if I have the equity at risk today, it's 200, but 10 years from now, I've paid down the principal and now my equity is 400. And so now I've got 400 at risk, so I could separate them out. So you just got to make your choice, but I would not recommend a lot of LLCs. Going to make your life really complicated.
Yeah. And lastly, she's asking, are there any other entity structures or considerations you believe that she should explore based on her investment strategies above?
No, I think the two different LLCs are probably the way to go.
Fantastic.
Okay. All right. If somebody has asked a really short question, we may be able to. Oh, that looks short.
Yeah.
Can't see it from here, but it looks short.
Landmark. Greetings. Can you share your thoughts on muddling through the wide variation in advisors and advice? Asset protection, Wyoming versus Nevada, or entity selections of property, other investments, succession, inheritance. So maybe the first one.
Last
right?
question just wound Scott
wow.
up.
He's right.
You know, advisors, you've got to do your due diligence. I would definitely get as much information as you can about anybody you select. I am not huge into a lot of the Wyoming, Nevada LLC stuff. There are some benefits to Wyoming with anonymity, but
not with CTA.
Yeah, with CTA. Although it was knocked, it was struck down, but it'll probably be.
We'll see.
Yeah. So that's what I would say. I would say that you need to do due diligence and make sure you got the right person.
And for God's sakes, don't spend $12,000 with anybody setting up an asset protection structure
Correct.
That involves out of state stuff that you aren't going
to
ever
you
use.
You don't need to be
don't
complicated.
Know how to run, and it's going to cost you a bunch of money just to maintain it. Okay. So we are out of time. Just want to remind listeners again, Tech and Tools Focus Group online tonight at CincinnatiRIA.com. CincinnatiRIA in-person meeting here in Cincinnati tomorrow at CincinnatiRIA.com. And on Saturday, an all-day actual no BS wholesaling workshop, CincinnatiRIA.com. Thank you, Tiffany.
Thank you for having us. Looking forward to many more shows, and to Scott
and to all the listeners who sent in questions. We appreciate you, and we'll be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.